This podcast is intended for healthcare professionals outside the United Kingdom and the United States of America only. Welcome to the Medical Insider COPD by Boehringer Ingelheim, a podcast offering a breath of fresh air to clinicians treating COPD across the globe. My name is Dr. Richard Russell. I'm a consultant chest physician at Lymington New Forest Hospital in the United Kingdom, a senior clinical researcher at the University of Oxford, and I'm editor-in-chief of the International Journal of COPD. I'm delighted to be your moderating host for this season of the Medical Insider COPD podcast series. I'm here to bring you news and insights in COPD right from the source, direct to you. Thank you for joining us today. Be sure to subscribe and follow Medical Insider COPD to ensure you do not miss any of our exciting podcasts now, the past, and in the future. Today, we're going to delve into a publication which is new and well worth reading. It's entitled, Does Pay-for-Performance Improve Patient Outcomes in Acute Admissions of COPD? We'll also look at an emerging and exciting topic on social media. And at the moment, social media is rather vexed with the use of pulse oximeters in COPD. But before I get into that, it gives me great pleasure to introduce a special guest for us today, Professor Sammy Sweezer from McGill University in Canada. Sammy is going to talk to us today about clinical trials in COPD and how important study design is. Sammy, please say hello.
Oh, hello, Richard.
So, Sammy, can you tell me how important it is that we get the right trial design for the right type of study? And what happens when we get things wrong?
Well, clearly we have a study question and we need to have the proper design that addresses this question. If the design does not correspond to the question, then of course the answer that we will get will not answer the study question. And this has happened quite a bit in the field of COPD because of some highly specific issues that we have to deal with when evaluating medications in COPD.
And what particular things do you think we need to consider when we're designing a study? Which aspects of the study can be critical?
So in a randomized controlled trial, there is, of course, the usual suspects, you know, random allocation, complete follow-up, accurate outcomes. But probably the crucial issue in COPD trials is the fact that patients who are entering the trials are already treated with single, dual, or even triple therapy, and they must discontinue their treatment before being randomized. So these trials have to impose an abrupt discontinuation of these treatments or some kind of run-in period.
And I guess if this discontinuation has a significant clinical effect and indeed is picked up as a primary outcome, this can lead to a problem with the results.
Absolutely. I mean, this has huge consequences. It can confound completely the interpretation of the results, because then the question is the result that we see an effect of the study treatment, of the abrupt withdrawal of the prior treatments, or of the treatment given during the run-in periods? Which is contributing to the answer? We don't know.
Recently, we've had some really significant triple therapy studies that have been published, particularly the IMPACT and the ETHOS study. Have these had issues with this kind of problem?
Oh, yes, very much so. So in IMPACT, for example, 70% of the patients were already treated with inhaled corticosteroids, and 40% were on triple therapy. So these patients had to discontinue their ICS abruptly, and this was followed by random assignment. And one of the groups was receiving a LABA/LAMA and had to therefore discontinue their inhaled corticosteroids. So this can have a huge impact on the results.
And did these studies have any issues as well with patient populations and how they might be representative of the populations we see in real life?
Yes, clearly. I mean, the studies used symptomatic patients with COPD with a wide range of airflow limitation from moderate to very severe. But there were an interesting subgroup of patients who have more moderate airflow limitation, up to 80% of predicted, and they had multiple exacerbations, and a history of an asthma diagnosis was allowed. So we see that there was a tendency to include more patients that have more of an asthma-like profile in these trials.
So Sammy, did these issues with the study design actually affect the outcomes that we saw?
clearly, if we look at the Kaplan-Meier curve, for example, of the time to the first exacerbation, which is the primary outcome in these trials, we see that the difference between the triple therapy and the LAMA-LABA group occurs only in the first month of follow-up. Subsequently, the two groups have exactly the same incidence of exacerbation. So clearly, this spike of exacerbations in the first month is likely mostly due to the discontinuation of ICS in patients who were then put on a LABA-LAMA.
One of the things that came out of these studies was actually a mortality signal. And we've been looking for mortality benefits from treatments in COPD for a very long time. So this created quite a lot of excitement and interest. Were these mortality signals real, and what may they represent?
Similarly, I think the mortality data also represents an effect of discontinuation for two reasons. One is that the mortality difference occurs only in the first 90 days after randomization. After that, the two groups have exactly the same mortality rate. So clearly, there is an early effect of mortality, which is likely due to discontinuation. And also, the impact data show us that in the subgroup of patients who do not have ICS and therefore did not have to discontinue ICS at baseline, the mortality between triple therapy and LABA-LABA are identical. So clearly, these two elements are very strong evidence for the effect of a discontinuation of ICS rather than of the introduction of triple therapy.
In a moment, we're going to talk about risk and benefit and understanding that there are benefits of inhaled corticosteroids in the right people. But first, let's discuss real-world studies. And what have we learned from real-world studies, and how do they differ from randomized controlled trials?
Well, the major difference is that we do not intervene in real-world observational studies. We observe the clinical practice, address questions with respect to this data, to these observational data. Of course, we need to be able to emulate randomized trials with these data. We need to use state-of-the-art design and statistical tools to create comparable treatment groups. So what have we learned? Well, we learned much about the safety of medications over the long term. Randomized trials are short term. These studies can look at 10 years of follow-up. So we've learned a lot about safety issues, but we've also learned a lot about effectiveness. So comparing triple therapy to LAMA-LABA, for example, when these are initiated, is very different than comparing triple therapy to LAMA-LABA in a randomized trial where patients have to discontinue their treatments before being randomized. So that key difference provided differences in the results between these. And I think observational studies have a lot to bring to the table of the evidence for the treatment of COPD.
I think we need to be very clear that we're not saying that randomized controlled trials are not important, not significant, and haven't got a place in studying COPD. So how do randomized controlled trials and real-world observational studies complement each other when sometimes it appears they may even contradict each other?
Yes, so indeed, it does appear that they contradict each other because they are not addressing the same questions. So for example, initiating triple therapy with initiating LAMA-LABA in an observational study is not the same as in a randomized trial where you also have the discontinuation of ICS besides the initiation. So clearly there are places where the two would not be comparable. So I recently wrote a paper on adaptive selection trials for COPD. We can arrive at a design of a study that would be comparable to an observational study where we would not have these biases of treatment discontinuation of inhaled corticosteroids clouding or confounding the results of these randomized trials. So clearly, the two have a very important place in evaluating treatments for COPD, but of course, they both have to be properly designed and properly analyzed.
It's not an easy job to put all this together and turn it into a guideline. And we've got ERS guidelines, ATS guidelines, obviously the GOLD strategy. Do you think the guidelines get it about right for the use of inhaled corticosteroids in COPD and indeed withdrawal of steroids in COPD?
Yes, I think they do get it right. I mean, these are very serious exercises at looking at the evidence. And the evidence and the guidelines, I think, have gotten this right, where patients start with a long-acting bronchodilator or two long-acting bronchodilators and eventually move on to ICS, where ICS are reserved for a specific group of patients, patients with frequent exacerbations, patients with elevated blood eosinophils, and I think these correspond very well to what we see from the randomized control trial. So yes, I think the guidelines get it right, and the guidelines on how to discontinue inhaled steroids in patients who do not need them, I think are very well designed, very well devised, and they should be followed carefully to be able to avoid unnecessary harm in many patients with COPD.
We've talked already about now benefits of the use of inhaled corticosteroids. Do these drugs have risks as well? The big one people are worried about is pneumonia, but I suspect long-term there may be other issues too.
Yeah, indeed. So pneumonia is something that occurs quite early, and that's why it was detected in randomized control trials. But there are other concerns with steroids in general, and we learned about these effects from the use of oral steroids, but the inhaled steroids have increased risks of cataracts, especially at higher doses, increased risks of fractures with long-term and high-dose use. Hip fractures are elevated with the use of inhaled corticosteroids. So these could only be detected in long-term observational studies. So yes, there are concerns with long-term use. And if we are keeping the patients alive with these medications, we should be somewhat concerned about the harms that we may be causing them.
So it's absolutely critical that we look carefully at every individual and look at the risk-benefit profile of them, measuring exacerbations, measuring eosinophils, and actually then get them on the right treatments for them. If they're not suitable for inhaled corticosteroids, we should actually optimize them with other treatments, Sammy?
Yes, so the long-acting bronchodilators without inhaled steroids, either single or dual, are very effective. They've been shown to reduce the incidence of exacerbations. And in the majority of patients, these medications would be the treatment of choice. As I said before, there are subgroups of patients who would benefit from adding an inhaled corticosteroids. But certainly, a large majority of patients do not need them. And long-acting bronchodilators are very effective in those patients.
This has been a fascinating discussion, Sammy, from the ideas behind study design, methodology, right the way through to actually now practical treatment. Can I ask you briefly to describe, when you look at a paper, particularly an RCT, a randomized controlled trial, how do you analyze the quality of that study?
Yes, so of course, there are the what I call the usual suspects. There are tools in a randomized trial. There are certain things that need to be established. How was the allocation random, the blinding? Was the follow-up complete? I mean, this is something that was not known very much in COPD until the TORCH trial, that patients have to be followed up completely even if they discontinue treatment. And so these are issues, the accuracy of the outcomes. Have the outcomes been adjudicated? Are they solid outcome measures? So these are, you know, the usual suspects that you look at. But in COPD, I think one of the big elephants in the room, if you wish, is the fact that patients are being discontinued their current treatment and being randomized to study treatments. And that has a very large impact. That's why perhaps adaptive selection trials should be used in the future in COPD to avoid the effect of these discontinuation effects on the results that we see.
Thank you for all that. Now, to finish, I'm going to put you on the spot. Perhaps you could summarize just a few key points that you'd want the audience to take away that they can apply both when they look at studies and indeed in their practice.
Oh, so first, of course, I think one of the messages when they look at an observational study, there are so many potential flaws in these studies that one of the messages I give is if it's too good to be true, it's probably not true. So I think use your instinct for observational studies. For randomized trials, I think we have written enough papers on knowing how to do these studies better. And I think the reader can actually make good sense now that we have probably 10 or 15 years of knowledge about study design in COPD. But at the end of the day, I mean, COPD is one of the very few diseases that we have where we have data to be able to use the right treatment for the right patient. And in this case, I think we have to be careful to avoid giving triple therapy to all patients with COPD. Otherwise, the inhaled corticosteroid in there will be like the cannon that is used to kill a fly, and that cannon can cause significant collateral damage in the case of COPD.
Professor Sammy Sweetser from McGill University, Canada, thank you so much for joining us. It's been a great pleasure, and I've learned loads, and I hope you'll come back to the podcast again.
Richard, it was a pleasure doing this with you, and I'm glad to do it again, and I can do it for hours. There is so much to say. We have such a rich disease to talk about.
Thank you. Excellent. in a moment, I'm going to unpack for you an important hot topic in social media, the use of pulse oximeters in COPD. But first, I want to tell you about a new paper just published in Thorax, Volume 77, Edition 3, March 2022, entitled "Does Pay-for-Performance Improve Patient Outcomes in Acute Admissions of COPD?" This is published by Philip Stone et al. From the National Heart and Lung Institute and Imperial College. In the United Kingdom, we have a thing called the best practice tariff, where we are incentivized in hospital to perform various aspects of hospital COPD care. This involves particularly a discharge bundle, a checklist before we discharge the patient. The question these researchers wanted to know was, did this compensated COPD bundle, driven by the best practice tariff, reduce 30-day mortality or readmission? So did these quality indicators that we measure, and we do, change into patient outcome? This was a longitudinal study performed between the 1st of February 2017 and the 13th of September 2017. It used a mixed effect logistic regression model to then adjust for age, sex, length of stay, smoking, and comorbidities. All of these cofactors could obviously affect outcome. So what did they find? Well, the group studied to over 28,000 patient episodes, 37% of which had this best practice tariff applied to them. There was no associated reduction in 30-day mortality or readmission for any of the aspects of the best practice tariff of quality, such as admission time, being given inhaler checks, or indeed having a follow-up with a respiratory team. However, there was a lower mortality in those people that received a specialist review during admission. Now, this specialist could be a specialist nurse or indeed a senior doctor. But this was the only thing that made a difference to mortality. So what can we conclude? Well, while discharge bundles probably do improve the quality of care and indeed the security of follow-up, they don't affect overall the clinical outcome, except for specialist review. So maybe the quality is better, but the outcomes are not. So now let's unpack an important hot topic in COPD currently our patients are worried about. Well, let's talk about pulse oximeters. Pulse oximeters are being spread widely throughout the globe. They're a useful way of monitoring patients during COVID, but patients with COPD have particular benefits and problems with pulse oximeters, and this is widely now available on social media for discussion. The COPD Foundation, for example, has developed a series of articles to help patients with the use of pulse oximeters and indeed is tweeting regularly about how to use them and how to understand their outcomes. Cheaper pulse oximeters may be slow. They may be less effective, and you need to be careful about what you're getting, but also aware of the pitfalls when recording your pulse oximetry, the use of nail polish, the use of having warm hands rather than cold hands. The COPD 360 social community is discussing that actually pulse oximeters should be used in the context of an action plan. This may be very useful in COVID and indeed in COPD going forward. And it seems that it's the baseline level and change from baseline is important. So we as practitioners need to understand and know what our patients are doing and saying. They find pulse oximeters reassuring, but they also must be taught that baselines and changes in baselines may be important than absolute figures. And be aware of the pitfalls, how to use them, how to select them, and what to do when the numbers change. So thank you for joining me on today's Medical Insider COPD podcast. I hope you've enjoyed this discussion about clinical trials, triple therapy trials, and indeed how we interpret them. We've unpacked an important new paper, how we should actually use our skills when we see our patients in hospital with acute exacerbations of COPD, and be aware of the pitfalls of pulse oximeters and what patients are saying. I hope you'll join me next time for the next Medical Insider COPD podcast in this series, and please subscribe and look up the ones we've done previously and keep your eyes out for the ones coming forward.